Welcome back to The Daily Poem, a podcast from Goldberry Studios. I'm Sean Johnson, and today is Monday, March 18th, 2024. Today's poem is by Robert P.T. Coffin, born this day in 1892. Coffin was a World War I veteran, teacher, literary editor and critic, as well as a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer of poetry. Coffin also is the author of what I would call a seminal piece of food writing, an essay he wrote for Gourmet magazine in the 40s called Night of Lobster, which is a great human interest piece about an encounter with a Maine lobster fisherman. I will try and put a link to that essay down in the show notes. In fact, when he is remembered, which is tragically not often enough these days, Coffin's name comes up in association with his essays almost as often as it does with his poems. Today, our business is with the poems, though, and we'll be reading two. Both do a great job of encapsulating what Coffin was known for as a poet, taking something commonplace or even transitory, momentary, some object in decay or some fleeting moment, and enshrining them in his poems so that they take on a sort of eternality, a lasting monument that might even live beyond the thing itself. He was a great hand at taking the commonplace and elevating it in that way. The first is called The Hill Place. The Tompkins homestead was the sort men used to build when men could be at home in safety with their thoughts, their God, and their fecundity. Set high upon a hill, it seemed consecrate to some design, a house the older gods would choose for ends malignant yet divine. The family here were six removes from the man who built it strong. Perhaps they were unwise to stay in one dwelling place so long. For one son went about the place with footsteps very light and wary, and nothing lit behind his eyes. And two of the girls would never marry. There were too many silences in the rooms above, below. There was an open chamber room where only the mother used to go. One of the meals was served upstairs. The grandfather with a puzzled face sat quiet, but could not recall what was amiss about the place. If one could still believe in hands behind the dark as back of light, it may be that high house would wear thin flames about it in the night. There's a striking marriage in that poem of the of mundane and the eerie and supernatural. Nothing otherworldly is ever really implied about this house, and yet the suggestions of supernatural overtones certainly adds another depth to it when he says the house looks like the kind the older gods would choose for ends malignant yet divine. And then in the conclusion that if one could still believe in this kind of thing, in some sort of supernatural reality that matched or spoke about the physical reality, that in the dark of night you might see this house wreathed in thin flames. Those flames are suggestive because they could tend in more than one symbolic direction. A thing that wears flames but isn't consumed by them could put us in mind of the burning bush in the presence of God, but also of something like the will-o'-the-wisp, the flames that lead people astray, lead them to their death in the woods and the swamps. And the latter maybe seems more likely here, as the most recent inhabitants of this house have really stagnated here. Rather than being led somewhere to perish, they've really failed to leave this place, and now they're perishing there. The son who goes about the place with nothing lit behind his eyes, the grandfather who can't quite get a grip on the reality of the place where he has lived, his ancestral home. And you can imagine that this family is dying out, both literally and figuratively. And there's one of my favorite lines, though, is not those, any of those more aspirational constructions or images, but this one phrase: there were too many silences in the rooms above, comma, below. Just the space of that comma and then the word below is so crushing and so full of weight. There are too many silences in the rooms above, and your imagination immediately starts to think about what the difference could be between the rooms above and the rooms below when the other shoe falls and the picture is complete. In fact, there were too many silences everywhere. But he can say that without having said it, and that's a great poetic economy there. The second poem is a little more chipper. It's entitled Day's Diamond. On a day as clear as glass, I saw through swaying rockweed pass a fish like a diamond rolled on the grass. The rainbow went along with him under his fins as they curved to swim. His eyes bulged out as teardrops brim. So much a part of the sea he was, the hammer of my heart must pause. I saw the music of his jaws. Then, like a thought on a starlit night that goes when brought into the light, he swam downhill and out of sight. And I stood still and was subtly glad such bright things creation had to elude us thus and leave us sad. It's the kind of final line that makes you want to say very little about the poem. It says it so well. The idea of a fleeting experience that can actually excite the greater longing within the person who's had it, that pain or nostalgia of a desire for something beyond what your grasp can reach. This has been the Daily Poem. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another poem for you. To listen to past episodes or to support the show, please visit dailypoempod.substack.com. On behalf of our whole team at Goldberry Studios, I'm Sean Johnson. Until next time, happy reading.